Today's program has been brought to you by White Oak Pastures, a five-generation Georgia-based beef and poultry farm determined to conduct business in an honorable manner. For more information, visit whiteoakpastures.com. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning. You're listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. I'm your host, Joe Campanelli. I'm the beverage director of Del Anima, Lartuzzi, Anfora, and the newly opened La Picho restaurant all in downtown New York City. And this is the show that brings you everything that is delicious to drink and the people who are responsible for creating them, for telling you about them, and all of those great beverages. I'm very excited today because today I have on Tressa Eaton. She is the New York editor of thegreattastingtable.com, which is a daily free subscription magazine. And Tasting Table has everything from restaurants, wine, cocktails, events, food, recipes. But today we're going to focus really on Tressa's, on the new article on the best cocktails in New York City of 2012. But before we get started, I'm just going to give you guys a little background on Tressa. She was recently appointed to the New York editor, so the head editor of TastingTable.com. Tasting Table's, it's online, so you can read it anywhere, but there are editions in San Francisco, Chicago.
Yep, Chicago, L.A.,
L.A.,
Miami, D.C.
So quite a few. And she's a native of Virginia. And before joining Tasting Table in 2010, she worked with Serious Eats, Apartment Therapy, Martha Stewart Living, Food and Wine, Gourmet, rest in peace, and is a graduate of Wesleyan University, where she wrote her thesis on canning. Which blew my mind. I want to ask you a little bit more about that. I went to the New York University food studies program.
Oh, such a good program.
I loved it. It was fascinating. And as I was leaving, they were changing the program to be more and more about food production and food systems. And I'm sure that someone there had some expertise on canning. But why canning? Why were you interested in that?
Oh, I thought it was such a fascinating way to a lens to look at history, especially big upheavals, wars, and things like that. How canning has moved from something that people did because they had to today, when people go to the green market and they buy a pint of beautiful strawberries for $12, and then they go out and get the canning equipment, and then before you know it, you have a $30 pint of jam. So it's really transformed over the years.
Is there a canned food ingredient that you always keep in the house that you're very excited about?
Oh, I always have some sort of pickles. Mm-hmm. Yeah, bread and butter pickles, something like that.
So your canning is including jarred and pickled?
Yeah, mason jars, pickles, beans, jams, conserves, apple butter, you name it, anything that can go in a mason jar.
And that's all considered the canning.
Yes.
And we're going to talk more about the drinks issue, but since we have an expert in canning on it, this is for sure the first canning expert that we've had on In the Drink. What's a tip that you give people if they want to jar or pickle something at home?
I always say, the food isn't going to get any better when you put it in the jar, in the mason jar. So start out, go talk to your local farmer, go to your local green market, get the best quality produce you can, because the quality that you start with, that's going to be when you open that jar 6 months later, you want to break open those strawberries in January and have that taste of August or July. That flavor that you start with is going to come through down the road.
And have you seen anyone using canned or pickled ingredients to good use in cocktails and drinks?
Oh, hells yes. Yeah, like with picklebacks and pickle juice.
Kind of a leading question.
Yeah. Tons of people doing their own stuff out there. I mean, that's totally part of that movement of doing your own juices and, doing your own bitters, all of that. And so doing your own pickles and you know, pickled okra on the side of a Bloody Mary and things like that are awesome. And I love to see bartenders doing that.
Well, tell us about pickle backing and what's that all about, and how do you like to see that? It's just like take a little shot of pickle juice.
Wash it down with a shot.
So maybe like a whiskey shot and then
for sure. And what? You have that brine and that salt and that juice, you know, that pickle juice. And I highly recommend it next time you feel like knocking some shots back.
Okay. Well, I don't think there was any pickle back in the best cocktails of 2012.
There wasn't this year. I may have consumed a few in my quest for research, but we did not end up with any.
How many cocktails did you taste? How many different places did you visit for the research for this article?
Oh, I'd like to no comment on that one. too many. But we ended up with 5.
Okay.
And we ended up with 5 at 5 bars around New York City, 5 that have opened or revamped in the last year. And so it's 5 cocktails that we really think people need to drink. And it's also 5 bars that I love and I really think people need to get to.
So what are those 5?
So those 5 are the Wayland, which is just this amazing bar. And I really want to encourage people to get there because they are over in the East Village in Alphabet City and they got hit really hard during Sandy. So get out there, support them, drink some booze. The Wayland, Booker and Dax, which people probably know, David Chang, Momofuku. It's their crazy cocktail laboratory, also in the East Village. The Nomad, which is just such a beautiful space. I think you were recently there.
I was there on Sunday. It was my girlfriend's birthday, and we were in the library for about 2.5 hours drinking. They have I think those are some of the most exciting cocktails right now. And for them to have so many different cocktails on the menu and be able to accommodate so many flavors, but for them all to be so good is really impressive. Yeah. And considering from the restaurant operations point of view, from someone who, you know, who works in restaurant operations, I'm just amazed and impressed because they are always really busy. It's really popular. And to have a team of bartenders who are able to produce 35 cocktails at that high quality level, that's awesome.
The list is so deep, and it's a perfect place for a special occasion, a date. It's super classy. The bar is gorgeous, all of that. And then our last 2 are from the Beagle, which recently revamped also in East Village. They've got new decor going on. And then finally, Jaybird, which is on the Upper East Side, started out in Midtown, also revamped and reopened. And you can find all of these at tastingtable.com/bestcocktails.
tastingtable.com/bestcocktails. Yeah. You know, there's 2 interesting things that I'm noticing just from the list of where those cocktail bars are.
Yeah.
Number one, since when are there good cocktails in the Upper East Side or anything good to eat for that matter? No. I think there's been an Upper East Side kind of renaissance recently.
Especially this season. Such a boom.
There's some really great stuff going on up there. And then 3 of the spots were in the East Village. And they weren't from the places that you might have, you know, normally thought of, like PDT,
right?
Death and Company,
right?
And you know, I love Maya Well, and Amore Margot, I think, is really fantastic.
Oh, definitely.
And there's more, and there's lots and lots of stuff. So East Village has become kind of a cocktail central
for sure. The streets are just running with delicious booze in the East Village, practically. It's every block. There's a great bar down there. So
what were your criteria for choosing their top cocktails?
We were looking for, you know, something that was interesting, something that was different, something that also showed off the bar's strengths. We are looking for trends this year, lots of gin, lots of fun techniques, and then also looking for recipes that a cocktail enthusiast can make at home. So not only we publish this list, but also at tastingtable.com/bestcocktails, you can also find all of these recipes. So if you're not in New York or it's too cold and you don't feel like going outside, you can just make the cocktail at home.
Yeah. And so let's go through these cocktails really quickly.
Yeah.
If you guys go on to tastingtable.com, make sure you're in the New York City edition. And then you can find the best cocktails of 2012. They're absolutely beautiful, all of them. And I like how they all are, they all look very, very different as well. It's something that I think about when putting a cocktail list together, not to have too many of the same glass, the same spirits. They all look very different. I've never seen anything in my life like this Basil Bixby, though. It looks like wheatgrass shot.
Yeah, or
in a cocktail list.
Or moss in a glass or something like that. I went and I hung out with the guys over there and they made me one, and it is bright green.
And that's at Booker and Dax.
That's right? At Booker and Dax. And it has this incredible flavor of basil that just hits you, and gin, and it's delicious and it's fun to serve to your guests. You could even serve it for Christmas. It's so green. And over at Booker and Dax, because they're using all those crazy, wacky tools, they use liquid nitrogen to freeze the basil down and powderize it. But we were able to work with them to create a recipe for home bartenders, and it turns out you can just use a blender at home to get the same effect, so you don't need to go out and invest.
Then why did they use liquid nitrogen?
Because it's cool, and it makes the glass all cold, and it, you know, it's fabulous looking, and there's, you know, liquid nitrogen flying around. It's great.
So they're emblematic of this kind of molecular coctology.
Yes. Like they also have a gin and juice, which I love, that takes grapefruit juice and puts it in a centrifuge.
Okay.
So you kind of have like...
So you separate out the solids and you have a clear grapefruit juice?
Yeah.
Really interesting.
Yeah.
And is there anyone else, did you come across anyone else who's using some of these techniques in cocktails?
Well, I think WD-50, you know, they are always on the cutting edge over there of doing crazy stuff. And I think really these techniques, you know, bartenders are passing them around, and things that are simple to the complex. We have another cocktail at Jaybird, and it's fat washed. It's not quite as crazy as liquid nitrogen, but it's called the Honey Nut Old Fashioned, and it uses fat washed bourbon. And you put peanuts in the bourbon, and then infuse that bourbon with the flavor of peanuts, and then end up letting the fat chill it down, let the fat rise to the top, scrape it off, and you have peanutty bourbon. So cool, just all sorts of cool techniques like
that. And so people are really, I know a couple of years ago when PDT did the fat wash bacon cocktail, it sort of became a thing, and then I feel like it subsided a little bit. So now fat washing is coming back, and I haven't seen a peanut fat wash cocktail, so that's pretty cool.
But bacon will never die.
Bacon will never, never die. Let's talk about that's the Honey Nut Old Fashioned, the fat wash cocktail. The Flatbush Swizzle.
Yeah.
Over at the Beagle.
Yeah, this is delicious. It comes in a tall glass, super refreshing, and it uses two types of white rum, which is really fun, and nutmeg, great, you know, great for the holidays, and falernum, which is this tincture of all these spices, kind of gives it that West Indies flavor.
Yeah, falernum is fantastic. It's a sweetener, a very complex sweetener, and I like to do, because it adds complexity to your drink, kind of the way like a bitters would add complexity, instead of just using sugar, which is not very complex. Or you can use Demerara sugar, which has a little more complexity. If you use falernum as your sweetener, it just adds all of these really interesting flavors. So the Flapper Swizzle, emblematic of using rum in cocktails. I think that's something that a lot of bartenders are getting excited about.
Definitely.
Right now.
And not just using one type of liquor, but building with two types. And these two types of rums play really well together, which is fun.
All right. We're going to take a quick break, but when we come back, we're going to talk about the Pims for Pros from the Wayland and the Old Alhambra at the Nomad. Listening to In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org.
You're listening to Kursk by Controller on heritageradionetwork.org.
Wow. White Oak Pastures is the only farm in the United States that has its own USDA-inspected red meat abattoir or slaughterhouse and its own USDA-inspected poultry abattoir or slaughterhouse. We partner with Whole Foods to deliver our high-quality meat and poultry from Miami, Florida, all the way to Princeton, New Jersey. One family, one farm, five generations, 145 years. A full circle return to sustainable land stewardship and humane animal stockmanship. For more information, please visit our website, whiteoakpastures.com.
And welcome back to In the Drink on HeritageRadioNetwork.org. I'm here with Tressa Eaton from Tasting Table. We're talking about the best new cocktails of 2012 New York City. You can also follow Tressa on Twitter at Tressa Eaton. That's T-R-E-S-S-A-E-A-T-O-N. On Twitter, I've been following her. I thought your pairing of Lambrusco and Bob White's fried chicken sounded pretty delicious.
It's so good. You can find it on Wednesday nights at Bob White, also in the East Village. That's kind of the theme this morning, East Village. At Bob White in East Village, and they do it on Wednesday nights, and it's this awesome special. Bottle of Lambrusco, two fried chicken dinners. It's great.
Wow, that sounds delicious. Okay, so we're going through the cocktails, the top five cocktails of the year. We talked a little bit about the Basil Bixby at Momofuku's Booker and Dax, and we're actually going to be making one in a little bit. The Flatbush Swizzle at the Wayland with its two types of rum, and the Honey Nut Old Fashioned, the fat washed honey nut, the fat back Honey Nut Old Honey Nut Cheerios. I haven't had my Cheerios
yet. It's all that good stuff together in one cocktail. Bourbon, peanuts, fat, deliciousness, honey.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the PIMS for Pros at the Wayland.
Yeah, so PIMS, you know, you think of maybe an English summer day at a regatta, I don't know, hanging out at Oxford, something like that on the river. And the guys at the Wayland have taken that idea of a summer daytime drink and really hardened it up with rye whiskey, which you wouldn't normally find in a PIMS cup. And it's super refreshing, but also the kind of drink you want after work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And can you drink a PIMS in the middle of the winter in New York City?
Yeah. I think you can when you're at the Wayland.
And you're at the Wayland when it has some rye in it.
Yep.
Okay. And is that, what do you think, what kind of trend do you think that's emblematic of right now?
I think
that like herbal, bitter,
definitely. And also, like you were mentioning Amore and Amargo before, having, you know, these beautiful bitters and everything, people making their own bitters, people making bitters at home, bartenders making their own bitters and bitters focused cocktails and bars that are focused on bitters.
And ginger ale. I think people are using ginger ale. Good ginger ale.
Yeah.
You realize that you can have a perfectly great cocktail, but if you use, like, you know, some really crummy, like, tonic water or bad ginger ale, it'll mess it up.
And at the Wayland, they even go so far as to make their own cola.
Wow.
With the cola nuts and tons of spices and lime. And we also have that recipe on tastingtable.com. And it's a pretty delicious. It's not Coca-Cola, but they've done a pretty awesome job of cracking the code to cola over there.
Wow, that's really cool. Okay, and the old Alhambra, I definitely drank my fair share of these on Sunday night at the Nomad. Tell us about the old Alhambra.
So I think this is the perfect drink to have when you're at the Nomad. It's such a beautiful space. The bar is gorgeous. It feels like... you know, it sort of has those touchstones of something like the bar at the Four Seasons or Blenelman's at the Carlisle Hotel. It's, you know, just beautiful, the decor, all of that. And this drink is just layered with tons of booze. It's got sherry, it's got vermouth, it's got whiskey. It comes in a coupe glass. You just feel like, get more New York, really. You can't than this drink. It's great.
Yes, and definitely I feel like that spirit heavy cocktail is kind of having its moment now as well.
Yeah, a lot of bang for your buck in that one.
Wow, that's great. Okay, and so on this list, were there any drinks that were kind of runners up that didn't make it to the list that you're like, oh, I wish I could have, but I only had five spots?
Yeah, well, yeah, it's hard to just pick five. There are some great bars that have just opened, that were just opening as we were closing the edition for Best Cocktail, so they didn't quite make it in. Maybe they'll make it in next year for 2013, maybe just squeak in there. Like in Brooklyn, in my neighborhood, this bar, Tooker and Alley, just opened. And they're doing this great drink that uses rock candy, which is super fun, which I've never seen before, and brings me back to my childhood and going back to state fairs and things like that and eating rock candy. So,
rock candy on a string or on a stick?
On a stick. On a stick. In the glass, which is pretty cool. Lots of things that didn't make it in, but I'm really happy with our list this year. And what's really fun is that we did this in each of our city editions. So if you're traveling, you know, you can look at our list in LA, you can look at our list in Chicago, and see where you should drink when you get to those cities and what you should drink when you're there.
All right. You know, we were talking on the phone the other day, and I was like, oh, it'd be really fun if we could make one of these drinks on air.
Yeah.
Because you're telling me how, you know, you have recipes for them, people can make them at home, and you took the one from the Molecular Gastronomy place, and
yes.
I think that'll prove, if nothing else, that if you can make the Booker and Dax recipe in a shipping container in Bushwick, then you can make it at home.
Totally. I didn't bring the blender or the liquid nitrogen, but I did bike over this morning a cocktail shaker and some simple syrup and the gin and basil puree all prepped out. The lovely ladies at our two food editors helped me prep this all out. So I've got some lemon juice. So I know, is it too early for a cocktail?
It's never too early.
It's never too
early.
Not
on in the drink. this shipping container is timeless. The shipping container is 5 p.m. on the beach.
It's always time for a cocktail.
All right. So what is this? This looks actually a little too healthy to be a cocktail. This
no. Beach. Well, you know, the gin has got, you know, like gin and tonic for when you're suffering from malaria. So sort of healthy.
Okay.
Sort of healthy, but...
So how do you put this together?
So you take, first, if we were at home and we had a blender, we'd put the basil and the gin together, and then we'd blend it until that basil was just bright, 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 bright green. And then you'd take it in a sieve, and you'd strain out the solids. So we already have the gin and basil puree ready to go here. Get it open. Take a whiff of that.
It looks like wheatgrass, but even like darker and deeper and green and mossier.
Yeah.
And as soon as you open it, you smell that gin. It's kind of like
gin.
Yeah.
It's bright. It's botanical. I want to drink some right now.
It smells like gin in the summer. You're outside.
Yeah.
Someone just cut the grass. It's fresh, and you're like an herb garden, and you're drinking like a gin and tonic, and that's what that smells like. But it looks like a swamp.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. maybe this isn't the drink that you would offer to someone who's new to cocktails, or but I think this is such a fun drink for people who are a little bit more adventurous. So then after you get the basil and the gin together in a shaker, you add some ice, put that gin in, and then a little bit of lemon juice and a little bit of simple syrup. And...
All right. So how much of this gin green solution are we using?
A good
amount.
A good bit. Splash there.
Very scientific. All right. Here's a good bit. Put it in here. And then what are the other components?
We're going to add 3/4 ounce of simple syrup, and we're going to add 3/4 ounce of fresh lemon juice. I've never made a cocktail on the radio.
No, me neither.
I feel bad for the listeners.
Well, now they're gonna get proof that you're able to make this at home. So 3/4 ounce of simple syrup.
Yes.
So, and 3/4 ounce of lemon.
Yes.
So the idea is you're balancing out. Every good cocktail is all about balance. You're balancing the sweetness here with the acidity of the lemon juice and the strength of the gin. And usually you can do a direct balance between the exact same amount of acid if you're going to use lemon juice as your acidity and your sweetener. So if your sweetener is simple syrup, if it's an equal part 1-to-1 simple syrup, then that works with the same volume of citrus. You can make a stronger, more concentrated simple syrup as well, a thicker syrup, which you'll need less of the syrup. And those are great as well to use. For those of you at home, simple syrup is equal parts sugar and water, or any kind of solution of sweetener and water. And they're great for sweetening cocktails because you don't have those granules of sugar and it really mixes very well. If you want your drink to be a little more concentrated, you can do 2 parts sugar to 1 part water, for instance, or you can use honey. And same thing, if you do equal parts or 2-to-1, it'll change the ratio. But here we have a normal simple syrup.
Yes, just a 1-to-1. And I think it's always great to have simple syrup around at home. And then, you know, the next morning when you have a hangover, you can use it in your coffee. It's ready to go.
All right, we're shaking this up. Wow. And it really does look like the drink that's on your website.
Yeah.
And that took no time at all.
It's easy. It is really, really easy.
Hmm. Wow, and that's really good.
Yeah, drink it instead of green juice in the morning. It's green.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
You put that in your big juice cup and
yeah.
No one will know. That is truly, truly fantastic. Oh, my God. So what's exciting now? What else do you guys have coming on? What stories are coming out next? I was just reading. I'm a big cider fan, and I was reading about the Naked Goose cider.
Yeah, the Naked Flock.
The Naked Flock.
Yeah, it's a great new brand. It's New York. It's local. I had it on my Thanksgiving table, but I think it's a great thing to have around the house to carry you in through into the holidays when guests drop by. Offer them some cider. It's yeasty. It's fermented. It's not like a traditional cider, like a fresh cider that you would get from the green market. This is a hard cider.
A hard cider.
Yeah.
Similar kind of to the Normandy ciders from.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
I haven't had it, but I just love this story. These geese just feasted in this guy's field.
Yeah, on poppies, and then they passed out. This is, I guess, the old wives' tale. And then the farmer, I guess, thought they had kicked the bucket, and so he plucked them. But then they woke up, and so then they were naked. They were naked, and that's where the great name of the cider came from.
Yeah, and yeah. I love that you're seeing cider around
more and more. It totally a cider revival in New York going on right now. It's amazing how many brands are out there just from the state alone.
And what are some of your other favorite New York ciders?
Let's see. Astor Wine and Spirits has a great selection. Mm-hmm. That's where I've gone to scope out ciders.
I go to Astor just to learn about stuff.
Like, I like to just wander the aisles.
And I'll go to Astor and be like, what mezcal do I not know about? And I'll go there and they'll have like 10 that I don't know about. I'm like, shit, I should know. I should like do some more research on this because they have just this incredible, incredible selection.
There's a great, I think that we read about this Pippin cider using mm-hmm. Pippin apples. And then there's also one, it's seasonal with cherries. It's this beautiful red. It's with apples. And Naked Flock also does a very, very small release this year, a pumpkin cider, which was great.
So is that a normal apple cider infused with pumpkins?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's really interesting.
Yeah, I'm hoping they'll make more next year so more people can get their hands on it.
I'm hoping I like that more than pumpkin beer. I'm not a big pumpkin beer
fan. Yeah,
Well, I think that's really exciting. you know, we, I think the, we had that, we did that cider week at the, at all the restaurants, and there's a real push for it. But I think with good reason, you know, cider is, it's inexpensive. It's something that's unique and steeped in the heritage of New York, right? We grow apples really well. It's pretty much the only fruit we grow all throughout the
winter. And you can put them in storage, which is great.
Yeah. You can put the apples in storage or the ciders in storage?
Both. You could age your cider, or you can put your apples in storage. You know, it's one of those cellar crops, like carrots and apples and things.
Wait. So tell me about storing apples. What do you mean about them? Like you can keep apples for a few weeks or months.
Yeah, throughout the winter? In a cellar, the right temperature. Mm. You know, it's those tricks farmers use to extend food throughout the winter, like putting carrots in sawdust. You know, before the age of huge walk-in refrigerators.
And this is something that you learned while you worked on farm. You worked on farms.
Yep.
All over the world.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's how I originally got into food. Yeah, and you know, apples have them over the winter and freeze them, and then you can turn them into an ice wine, an apple ice wine, things like that. So they're really versatile. It's amazing. It's a great New York crop.
And how does some of your experience working on a farm help you out as, you know, this fancy editor of a New York gourmet food magazine?
I think it always gives me a set. I always remember what it takes to bring that food to the plate, and how much energy goes into the production of food. And we can be so critical and, you know, go into a restaurant about this or that or whatever, but it's our food system is pretty amazing. So it gives me a huge sense of respect for people who grow food and also people who make food.
Yeah, there's so many levels and layers into getting what's in front of you. I think having some thought behind it really goes a long way.
Yeah.
Well, Tressa, thank you so, so much. I really appreciate it. Everyone, please do check out tastingtable.com and follow Tressa Eaton on Twitter. I know I do, at Tressa Eaton. There's always some beautiful pictures, some really interesting tips. And check out all of the cocktails and the best new cocktails of 2012. This is Joe Campanelli for In the Drink on heritageradionetwork.org. Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.